For the record, I'm Greg Blackwell, chairperson for the Strategic Planning and Finance Committee. It is 6:36 p.m. Wednesday, October 16th, 2013. With a quorum being present, the Strategic Planning and Finance Committee meeting is called to order. Welcome, everybody. Item two on our agenda is citizen comments, citizen communications. So, without any objections, I will open citizen communications. Citizen communications is now open. Anyone wishing to speak? No? Okay, being there's no one wishing to speak, citizen communications is now closed. Item three, overview and observations of the 2013-2014 fiscal year budget development review process. This is just something that I asked for Vez to put on the agenda for us. I wanted to reflect on my experiences. I attended many of those budget workshops, not all of them, but I would hazard to say the majority of them, probably 75% of them at least. And I thought it was just important to note that, you know, in the past, I'd always thought that those workshops were just kind of going through the motions, rubber stamp the budget, okay, let's go. But I was really surprised at how much discussion actually took place. Did any of you get to go to any? No? No? Well, in the future, I'd highly recommend going to at least pick a few departments you wanted to look at or something, and just listen to the debate that goes on. I thought it was worthy. Anyway, so short of that, I didn't have any recommendations about the process. I thought it was good. I guess my only thought was they had citizen comments beforehand, or they'd open it up to citizen comments, and if I didn't think of a question until they were in the discussion, I couldn't interject anything, or didn't feel like I could interject anything. So generally speaking, most of the council members or someone on council spoke up or spoke to what I was thinking. So I didn't have to worry about that, I suppose. But anyway, I just wanted to share that with you guys. It was a fairly long process.
How long did you stay?
I'm sorry?
How long did you stay?
Of all the meetings, I usually try to get out of here about 9. Some of the meetings ran till 10. I think one ran till 10:30 or 11, didn't it?
11.
And that was the longest one, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think generally they were from 7 to 10. Most, and some, I think maybe the first one ended at 9. But due to stuff at home, I couldn't stay quite that long. But anyway, so in the future, next budget year, it'd be great, I think, if we could listen in. So, any questions or comments about that?
Nothing. Those are online, right? So if you want to listen to them later, are they recorded as well?
I would imagine so. They were streaming them, so I'd imagine they're out there.
They're recorded.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe something to look into.
Yeah, if you have a week or so to take. But anyway. Item four is update of the city director of finance and the following items. And I'll just let, if it's okay for Vez, I'll just let you go through those bullets.
Sure. In your handout, I have numbered the pages. The first bullet we were going to cover is the adopted budget for next fiscal year. As Greg mentioned, the city council meetings that led up to the adoption of the budget, there were 5 separate workshops or work sessions for council to review the budget. They went into very in-depth review of city's overall budget proposal. Departmental budget line items, revenue budget line items, most of the underlying assumptions that staff used to come up with those, they went through those. So it was a very comprehensive process, and between those 5 budget work sessions, each work session had 4 public hearings. So that's 20 public hearings for the total process. Budget was adopted on September 4th, the second reading. And if you go to the city's website, I have pages 1 and 2 on your handout. This is what the website looks like on the budget. There's a little write-up about the budget, some highlights, some quotes from the mayor. And then on page 2, you will see all the budget-related documents we have in PDF format for citizens to click and read at their leisure. From the approved budget to the details of budget development calendar, city manager's budget message, budget presentations, any slides we used is available for public. All the public notices that we issued, whether they were required or not required by state law, we put it all up for citizens to see. Any amendments to the proposed budget that council make throughout the deliberations are posted there. And then, of course, the last one is the fee schedule. The fee schedule has from A to Z all city fees, from dog license, pet license, to plat review and subdivision engineering fees. So anything and everything you really want to know about budget, to the extent you want to know, is available to our citizens at their fingertips. The second bullet I have for y'all's update is to give y'all the final status of the closing on the first series of road bonds. You remember when council had approved the issuance of those bonds, they were going to be done in 6 series, the first series being for the engineering and right-of-way acquisitions. So we were able to get council's authorization to issue that first series, and we closed on those bonds for $5.52 million. These are GO bonds, general obligation bonds. So if you look at in your handout pages, starts with page 3, if you go to, this is, I made copies from the pricing book for y'all to kind of, at a high level summary of what we ended up with. On page 5 of that handout kind of gives you an overview of who the key players were in this transaction. The city's bond counsel is Bickerstaff Heath. Financial advisor is First Southwest Company. The initial purchaser underwriter ended up being Robert Baird. And the credit rating on this issue,
look at that, that's great,
is without insurance is A+, and with insurance is AA. So the higher the rating, the better we fare on the interest rates. On page 6, this kind of gives a overview, broad brush overview of the market conditions or historical market conditions, 20-year history of what the rates have been. So to give council just kind of feel for where we were not very long ago before this issue, you all recall we did the refunding to save interest costs. If you look at this, the right-hand side, about between 2012 and 2013, that's when we did the refunding, and we were at about 3.8, 3.7. So by the time we came for the first year, that was perfect timing for the refunding, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's pretty yeah. good.
So when we came for the first series of road bonds, the market had kind of moved, and the index at that point was 4.8. On page 7, bond market is kind of overly sensitive in terms of who is out there when you're out there in terms of selling. So we also look at who was in the market on that day that we were trying to sell our bonds. And there are two types of transactions. One is negotiated, one is competitive. We did the competitive sale because, in my opinion, that's the best bang for the city and taxpayers' dollars, because we price it on a bid. In a negotiated deal, you negotiate with one underwriter and the best price they can give you. If that doesn't work out, you go to the next and third and fourth.
Can I ask a quick question?
Certainly.
Why would anybody do negotiated? You kind of take competition out of the mix when you do that. What's the benefit?
There, sometimes there are advantages of doing a negotiated deal. If you're a large issuer, such as City of Austin or City of San Antonio, you can get a better deal doing a negotiated sale because they know, the buyer knows that, one, your creditworthiness, usually those cities are AAA. And they also have buyers on the retail side ready to buy their bonds, so that they don't get to hold it very long. So they give you a better price. When you go through a competitive sale, you're bidding against each other, so they're going to be very close to each other. So sometimes it is advantageous to cities to do a negotiated sale. But Kyle, being such a small issuer, we're better off doing a competitive sale because the margin between negotiated and competitive is really not that much for us. And I'll show you in a minute what that did to it, how that we fared. But on the day of the sale, if you look at the competitive side, there weren't a whole lot of issuers that day, especially in Texas. The only other entity in Texas was Fort Bend Mud, which is a mud, and they were around $3.6 million. On the negotiated side, the big guys were in the market that day. City of Dallas was there. And then, let's see, there was a school district. Midway ISD was there.
Denton ISD. Two school buildings.
Right. And then on page four, these are the top four bidders. We had a total of about 12 that bid on our bonds. But the top four that we were able to look at, and you see how close they are. 4.16 was the lowest. The second lowest was 4.17. I mean,
it's, what was that screen offer?
4.48, I think. So between Robert Baird and Robert James, I mean, it's just a hair difference between them. So we knew we were getting a good price. Then on page nine, this is how we stacked the principal repayment schedule for this bond series from 2014 to 2033. You'll see that towards the latter part of the maturities, the coupon rate's a little higher and the yields are about the same to coupon rates. The shorter the maturity, the bigger the variance is between coupon and yield.
I'm sorry, I don't know the difference between a coupon and the yield rates.
Yield is the if you held the bond to its maturity, that's the amount of money you're going to make.
Okay.
So bonds maturing in 2014, you're really not holding too long. So you're going to make about 0.45%.
Sure.
So if you look at the last one, if you held bond that matures in 2033, the coupon on that is 4.5, and the yield is going to be very close to the face value of the coupon.
Okay, what's the coupon rate then?
It's kind of like a dividend payment. Think of it like that. So it's the interest you earn for maintaining that bond. Is it paid monthly or quarterly? How's it?
We are paying quarterly on our bond.
Okay. Is that, you know, I'm thinking from an investment standpoint.
Yeah, so that's a good analogy.
So we pay the principal plus the coupon?
We pay the principal plus the coupon rate, but only for the time you're holding it. So it's 3% coupon, but this is going to mature in August of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So we're basically end up paying you 0.45%. You will make 0.45% from us, the issuer.
Right. Yeah, I'm still not tracking, I'm sorry.
The longer you hold, the more you make.
Okay.
That's the simplest way I can put this.
So, okay, and I understand that we would gain 0.45% at August. Is that right? Mm-hmm. However, we're paying out 3%. Am I thinking of that right, or do I have my pluses and minuses wrong here?
You have to look at it combined, because when
the yield is for the issuer, not not us.
No, the yield is for the buyer.
The buyer of the bond.
Buyer of the bond.
So we sell the bond.
They give us their money.
Right. And then we pay them $140,000 plus...
overtime plus interest of 0.45.
In the first year.
In the first year. So when you're buying bonds of mixed maturities.
Okay.
If you were to only buy our bonds with maturity of 2014, mm-hmm. you would only get 0.45. But if you blended your portfolio, you could build it up.
Okay. So how does, in that first year, how does that coupon rate? It's a 3% dividend to the buyer, yes. essentially?
So you earn 3% that year, which is a 45% yield on your total investment. Is that?
Mm-hmm.
So your coupon, you'll every month.
Okay, okay.
You earn 3% coupon, so that's the money.
I see what you're saying.
The investor earns that money every month.
Okay.
Divided by 12, so whatever.
So that 0.45% is based on the overall total investment. Dollar?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's my difference.
And the coupon is your monthly payment or your monthly interest that you
pay. Okay. I'm tracking now, thank you.
Okay. No, that's fine.
It's, yeah.
Good stuff.
And then, if you combine all of it, if you average all of it, it's 4.16.
Okay.
All right, so that's the first series of bonds. Now, there's a twist associated with that bond, and I don't know if you are aware of it. I want to make sure you guys are aware of it. We sold these bonds in August. My goal was to make sure that the funds were available as soon as council authorized the engineering contracts. We're ready to go. There's no delay because this is on a fast track. Well, the budget got adopted in September, first week of September. That same week, the city engineer announced resignation. He resigned.
Really?
Yeah, so, yes, our city engineer resigned soon after we adopted the budget. So we got the money in the bank, budget got adopted, city council even authorized extra help for the city engineer on this project. Everything was moving along in place, then Stephen decided to resign. He went back to private sector in design projects. And his new employer is his new employer is about 10 minutes from his home.
Yeah.
So that made a difference for him, I think.
Well, that's good for him.
Where did he live?
Cedar Park.
Okay, wow. Oh, wow.
And they gave him, I think, $30,000 more than we were paying. So all in all, that's what happened. So the city manager now is on a fast track to get a replacement city engineer. As a matter of fact, they had first set of interviews today, and they'll have the last three or four tomorrow. So hopefully we'll have a city engineer next week.
Yeah. Engineering firm.
At least we've
really
made an offer.
Picking up right now, all the construction. I mean,
right.
They're rebounding pretty quick right,
right.
now. So.
And private sector goes in cycles, so.
Yeah. The first to be hurt, and the first one that's coming back.
Right. So I wanted to make sure you all are aware of it. You know, we did everything to stay on track. This was something out of our control. But hopefully we'll pick up the delay. The last bullet under the agenda item for my update is the RFP I am about to release next week. This will be on actuarial services for the determination of city's liability on post-employment benefits. And this is on page, let's see.
10?
10. Right. Let me give you a little background what this is all about. The city of Kyle, like most employers, provides benefits to its employees. And the common ones are health insurance, dental insurance, and Some of them even provide gym membership, et cetera, et cetera. But on the government side, it is very common, in addition to a retirement system, they also provide for retirees. If you commit to X number of years of service, we will pay you after you retire either a third of your health insurance or a fifth of your health insurance, depending on the employer and what they come up with. Every city is different. In Austin, for example, they do not provide anything free. They, for retirees, after X number of years of service, I think the minimum is 25 years, they will, after you retire, they will pay for your health insurance up to 25% or 30% of the premium. So you bring 70% and they bring 30%. So it's kind of added benefit to retain experienced city employees over time. Because over time you're investing in them by training, the experience they've gained, and the efficiency in the process that they bring to the table compared to somebody brand new. And over the years, employers have kind of slowly moved away from it, of these post-employment benefits. Well, these post-employment benefits also have a liability. You don't know how long that person is going to live, how much you're on the hook for. So the books of the cities in the late 90s and early 2000 didn't reflect that liability. Well, the governing board that is over how cities will account for their transactions is called Governmental Accounting Standards Board, that is housed or officed in Washington, D.C., comes out with standards how everybody will report different types of transactions. So they're consistent. Whether you pick up our financial statements or you pick up somebody in New York City or Connecticut, it's all going to be the same and you will understand the same way. You know, I don't call it an orange and somebody calls it an apple to hide stuff. Well, they came out with a new standard that says, thou shall report liabilities on your financial statements for other employment benefits if you do offer. And they clearly laid out, this is how you're going to do it. City of Kyle has never done that, even though the standard was implemented in 2006. City of Kyle hadn't done it, and they were on a pay-as-you-go plan. If we have a retiree that would be eligible to be receiving this benefit, we'll just pay it as we go. In City of Kyle, when I came on board, when I learned this, that we weren't complying with it, I found out that we have three groups of employees. We don't make stuff simple here. We make it very complicated. Even though we're a small organization, we have three groups of employees. So these are the three groups. Group one, and I think this happened for a reason. In April of 2009, I think the city management here was contemplating whether to continue this commitment or not. I think they were evaluating, it's my guess, whether we should nix it, whether we should continue it. So I think what they came up with was, okay, if you're on our payroll on April 1st, 2009, and you have 5 years or more of service, then you're in group one. And for those employees, we will pay 100% of your health insurance after you retire with 25 years of continuous service. If you retire of continuous service.
Wow.
That's a huge commitment.
That's
it doesn't matter if you're a clerk or a police officer or anybody. If you have 25 years of continuous service and you were on the payroll on April 1st, 2009, you have this benefit coming to you. That's group one. Group two was on April 1st, 2009. If you have less than 5 years of service, you fell in group two. And for group two, what they did was that if you stayed with the city long enough and had 25 years of continuous service, we will pay up to $300 of your premium. But $300 was set on 2009 as the base year. We will adjust that each year based on CPI. Okay? So that's group two. Group three, if you were hired after April 1st, 2009, then you get nothing. Fortunately, most of our employees fall in group three. So what you will see on page 11, I have the definitions of each group for you. On page 10, and on 10 I show you how many we have in group one, which is 25. 25 employees.
18.
Not all 18 will make it to 25 years. Because of attrition, because they'll find someplace else to go, or they'll quit for whatever reason. Not all 18 will make 25 years. We have only one retiree currently in the city of Kyle that is in group one. Out of Public Works, a gentleman by the name of Boots, retired. Y'all may have heard this name. His name is Boots. I think his nickname is Boots, but they all call him Boots. He retired after 27 or 28 years of service. So he's the only one we're paying health insurance on. And we also pay health, dental, vision until you turn 65. So the idea there is that Medicare will pick up after. But that 65 is only for dental and vision. Health insurance is forever.
What's the present value of the liability right now?
Okay, getting to that. When I first started looking into it, my first question was, have we done an actuarial evaluation? Because that's the only way you can figure this out. There are people who do this for a living, and they figure, just like your life insurance, when you go buy your life insurance, they base it on your age, where you're a smoker or non-smoker, where you live, what part of the country you live, that kind of stuff. And they have this matrix that they use for your lifespan, and then they figure out what the liability is going to be for the insurance company. Likewise, for this kind of program, they also figure out what your annual contribution should be that you should be putting aside, which is the annual required amount that you put aside. And then you also figure out that if all these people were alive based on their actuarial lifespan, what the ultimate unfunded liability will be. If you continue paying in this fund at this rate, what if you're going to have a gap or not. So there are two things that you're measuring each year as you go. So when GASB came out with this standard, they said, your financial statement, by God, will have to show how you came up with what your annual contribution is based on your plan, and you will also show what your unfunded liability is to your taxpayers each year. Well, they never did an actuarial service, so they didn't have either one of those numbers. My predecessor came up with his own methodology for calculating the annual contribution. And I haven't figured out his assumptions because it's very hard to follow somebody else's spreadsheet without a whole lot of notes or that kind of thing. But what I figured that he was doing in his spreadsheet, he was knocking off one or two people here, one or two people there, just arbitrarily to figure out his annual contributions. Well, that's not a good way to do it. Because of budget constraints, I was not able to do it last year. But this year, I asked council to give me some money to get this done so we're in compliance with GASB standards. So long story short, we're going to do an RFP, seek firms who specialize in this to come in, look at our program, what the city council has committed to, and based on that, figure out what our annual contribution should be and what our current total liability is, if everybody stayed alive through their normal lifespan, and what the liability is for that group of retirees, and third, what is that gap that we need to make up? So council can, in a very educated way, make a decision whether they want to continue this program or not. Because this is not a, like a pension plan where you cannot yank it. You can yank it until somebody retires. You can yank it if they've retired. But until that time, you can make all of this go away. You can make it as generous as you want. It's all up to you. But in my opinion, council was never provided that basic information to make that educated decision. So my goal is to get that done, go back to council, share with them what the results were of that evaluation, and let them decide if they want to continue this program or not. Especially in light of, you know, Obamacare, if that goes through, if that continues, there's something out there for people to get until they turn 65.
Are there contingencies in there for if they retire from the city and they go work elsewhere? And
no. If you leave before you complete your 25 years of service, this goes away.
No, say they have 25 years of service. They still
retire from the city.
But then they go elsewhere to work and pull benefits elsewhere.
No. There's nothing that says, you know, if you go to work for City of San Marcos and they have health insurance and you're not taking theirs, but you're taking our freebie, it doesn't stop. Yeah, it doesn't have those kind of restrictions. It's very generic. It's a two-paragraph policy that is very expensive and costly that we made a decision based on not knowing the true cost and liability.
But from what I'm hearing you say, if they hit the retirement age and they go through the process of retiring, they're grandfathered in, essentially.
Yes. Until this changes.
If council changes something
now,
then everything is null and void,
right,
essentially.
Except for those.
Except for those that are grandfathered.
No, not
that
grandfathered.
Have actually
that
retired.
Have actually retired. You can't take that benefit away from them.
Agreed.
So that's why I said, you know, we only have one person right now. We can save in the long run if council wants to.
Does that liability need to be offset by some type of liquid asset?
The unfunded liability? No, you would have the standards require that you must have a plan to close that gap over a 30-year horizon.
What benefit would there to be to have a plan like this? In a business, when I offer my employees benefits of some sort, it's because I get benefits back by offering the benefits. So is there any reason why the city having this would it...
Longevity.
Longevity.
That's the only one?
The logic behind the benefits in municipal governments, state governments, federal governments has always been that on the front side, which is the salary compensation, has always been less than the private sector. So while they're not making at the front end, they were compensating at the back end for these employees.
Okay, so that's where it comes
in. It's the reverse or completely inverse on the private sector. They pay you up front, but towards the end, you're on your own pretty much. So as healthcare is getting more and more expensive, most cities and state governments have moved away from benefits like this. So I think, in my opinion, it's time for council to revisit, but I just can't go with blank numbers.
Right. So what's the timeline on
the I've shared that timeline on page 10. My goal is to get the RFP out on October 21st. The responses are due on the 14th of November. 22nd, November 22nd, I'm going to finish all the evaluations of the proposals received. My goal is to take it to council on December 3rd for the award, and then have them issue their report by January 16th. I'm trying to time it with our audit. Mm-hmm. So in the audit, I can say, this is my unfunded liability. Mm-hmm. And this is the gap.
This is your plan.
Yeah. That's costing us.
Any type of 401k or anything like that?
The city is has a retirement program that is a pool of 700 local governments in the state of Texas through TML. It's called Texas Municipal Retirement System, and where the employer puts in 7% and the employee matches that. And it's basically like a 401, but it's a defined contribution plan. On the 401 side, I think the most employers match up to 6% or 8%. You can go up to 16% if you want to, the employee. And depending on the market, you know, when you get to retirement, you may or may not have sufficient money. On the pension side, it's guaranteed payment to the employee when she retires. And the reason they're able to guarantee those payments is because they have such a large pool of people coming in, it's almost like Social Security, new money's coming in to pay the retirees coming out.
So instead of
the
Ponzi scheme is what you're doing?
Sort of. But these are long-term investments, so they're earning 8%, 9% still today. They're making 8 and 9%, where everybody else is making less than 1%. Because they don't need the money for such a long period of time. They're able to invest in 20, 30-year investments.
Okay.
So that's the goal, and the RFP will be posted on our website on the 22nd next week. And hopefully we'll have some good companies responding. My guess is because we're such a small employer and we only have, you know, 18 plus the 45 in group 1 and 2, which are affected. The rest of them, the majority of them are not affected. So my thinking is going to cost us less than $5,000 to get it done. But it'll be worth every penny of it, I think.
Thanks, Professor.
So if you hear we're working on OPEB, that's what it is.
Great. All right, well, that brings us to item 5. Our next meeting is Wednesday, January 15th, 6:30.
Are we here in this room?
Yes.
Does anybody have any comments, questions for Brevez or anything? Nothing? Then we're at item 6. Brevez, did you have something else?
Well, I just was going to add that the on the agenda, I always put the next meeting date.
Yes.
So if y'all have any conflicts and we need to reschedule, y'all can discuss it in that meeting.
Right.
So since it's on the agenda, it's open for discussion. And secondly, I also wanted to remind committee members that the entire year's calendar, all 4 meetings are on the website. So if you ever want to see when the next meeting is or which quarter that meeting falls on.
Right.
You can look on City's website. It's under the calendar.
And it's always the third Wednesday.
Third Wednesday of the month after the quarter. So it's January, April, July.
Right.
And October.
Yes. I could find December or January. All right.
So
okay.
We will probably see each other after Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's, right? Unless y'all have a special call meeting.
Unless something pops up,
yeah.
And I'll just be in touch with you.
Okay.
In fact, if anybody wants to be in touch with Pervez, if something pops up that
we need
to talk about, yeah, then just email Pervez and then he'll contact me and we'll work something out.
And I was going to ask y'all if in the January meeting, we'll be able to discuss the audit. We'll be able to discuss the valuation, actuary evaluation. It'll be done hopefully by that time. But if y'all wanted to know sooner, we'll have to schedule a special call.
Okay. That's going to be...
Or I can email the report if y'all are interested in seeing that.
Sure. That would be sufficient for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
Okay.
Well, then I guess I'm going to move to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. Move to adjourn. And second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Guys have it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
It lights still on.